Hello, junkies. Can you believe it? 30 episodes of Nocturnal Throwback. That's just so far. We still got 10 more episodes to go after this. Much more crazy, nutso, bonkers, schizo stuff to come later in this book. Nocturnal Throwback is, of course, the podcast where we repodcast the original 2007-2008 production of Nocturnal, which was written and podcast a chapter each week. This is the story that became the hardcover thriller released by Crown Books in 2012. Yes, it takes a while for books to get rewritten, edited, and published, something the tune of 5 years in that particular case. If you are not following our twice-weekly live streams of Sigler in Place, we are running the G-Smote Tournament. That, of course, is the acronym for the greatest sports movie of all time. In a time of COVID, in a time where sports are happening or are not happening, sometimes both at once, we bring you a brutal death dance of Hollywood sports-ish movies. We are still early in the first round. We do live streams every Tuesday and Thursday. They are a ton of fun. For the first round, we're doing two matches per show. So that's four matches per week. First round winners so far: number 1 seed Hoosiers beat number 8 seed Whippet, number 4 seed Chariots of Fire fell to number 5 seed Creed. Also, Thursday before I dropped this, which was August 27th, we had 3rd seed Bring It On up against a tough competitor in 6 seed Days of Thunder, and 7 seed Warrior, the underdog, up against the 2 seed Field of Dreams. But I recorded this episode before we did those matches, so there. So you don't get to know who they are unless you swing on over to facebook.com/ScottSigler. And you can check it out. We are having a blast. Your fellow junkies are loving it. They're hamming it up in the chat room. Everybody's having a great time. We would like you to join us and have some fun. We don't do anything political. We're trying to bring some smiles and some joy and some camaraderie. And yes, since it's a sport tournament, some teamwork. Together on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. GMT for the live streams, which you can watch live at twitch.tv/ScottSigler, youtube.com/ScottSigler, or facebook.com/ScottSigler. And you know, if you are asleep because you're in a different country when we do those, or if you have to work during those times, or you have family obligations, they're all stored on those same sites. You can go to twitch.tv/ScottSigler, youtube.com/ScottSigler, facebook.com/ScottSigler, watch the stored live stream after the fact, and enjoy all of the stuff. Now, with that being said, let's get into the messy business that is being Brian Clauser as he gets ready to do that Terminator stomp all over San Francisco. Here we go with episode number 30 of Nocturnal Throwback. Enjoy. Welcome to the free podcast novel Nocturnal. This is episode number 30. Is it time for Brian to embrace his role as a savior? Yeah, I think it is. Nocturnal is a podcast-only novel you can't buy in stores and you can't peek at the end. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. More information and more free stories available at scottsigler.com. This book contains adult language, mature situations, and lots of violence. Hello, junkies. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, whose voice am I listening to? I haven't heard this man in so long, and yet he sounds familiar. He sounds almost godlike. Well, here we go with Nocturnal, episode number 30. I have some news for you at the end of the episode, but I'll give you a real quick update before we get rolling. I finished the first draft of Contagious, sent that off to the editor, and the editor has sent back notes. Got one more month to meet the deadline, so you may not hear any more Nocturnal for another month, but I'll do the best I can to get you another episode. This episode is 22 minutes of pure story. We're only dealing with one of the plot threads at this point, but it's kind of action-packed, so I thought it might be enough to tide you over for a little while. I am somewhat pressed for time, so there will be no sound effects in this episode. Also, a picture of the area where the action goes down, I will put that up in the show notes at scottsigler.com. for episode number 30. Now, I know there are a lot of plot threads going on. For the next episode, I'm going to have to catch you up on everything. But for this one, the story so far is pretty simple. Brian Clauser, Adam Jessup, and Alder Jessup are driving towards the hospital to rescue Jebediah Erickson, also known as the Savior. On the way to the hospital, the Jessups armed Brian with some guns, getting him ready to go in and take on any resistance he might meet. Brian refused to wear the cloak of the Saviors, but Adam had something else for him to wear. Now we'll pick up the story, move on with episode number 30, and I hope you like the action of Nocturnal. Brian Clauser, Adam Jessup, and Alder Jessup stood at the corner of 18th and Portrero in San Francisco. A strange spot. The Victorian houses of Portrero were just to the west. Highway 101 was past an embankment to the east, and that same heavily wooded embankment ran south 3 blocks and abutted the north wall of San Francisco General Hospital's mental ward. Brian stood next to the Dodge Magnum. Street lights reflected off the black surface. Brian looked at himself in the curved, tinted window.
"That looks ridiculous," Alder said.
"That looks tight, Grandpa,"
Adam said.
"Real tight, yo. Man, I've been waiting to try this shit out like forever."
Long sleeves, black. 2 rows of flat black buttons down the chest. A wide collar that laid flat against the coat, but Brian could flip it up and it would wrap around his head from temple to temple. The fabric felt stiff, heavy. He could see why Adam had chosen this design. Navy peacoats looked stiff and heavy to start with. Wearing this at night on the streets of San Francisco, no one would give Brian Clauser a second glance.
"This is better than a cloak," Alder said.
"Hey, cop, how did you know Savior when you saw him?"
"Because people don't wear cloaks," Brian said. "I mean, outside of a science fiction convention or a gay pride parade, that is."
"You could have at least given him a trench coat," Alder said, "like Humphrey Bogart." "Every fucking jizz stain on the planet has a trench coat, yo," Adam said. "This has some motherfucking style. And besides, this ain't the movies, Grandpa. Hey, cop, tell Grandpa what cops do when they see a guy wearing a trench coat."
"We watch him," Brian said. "We watch him real careful. A guy in a trench coat is either a perv, a gangsta wannabe, a psycho hiding weapons, somebody who's seen too many movies, or a jag-off businessman. Adam, this coat is nails."
"Thanks, yo.
But I mean, come on. I know it's all high-tech and shit, but this is fabric, man. It can't really stop bullets, can it?"
Adam reached to the small of his back and pulled out a flat black pistol with a silencer. Brian instinctively reached for his shoulder holster, but his hands hit only thick fabric and buttons. Adam shot 3 times. 3 hard hammer hits rocked Brian's chest. He took a step back, blinking. Then his hands felt up and down his chest, feeling for blood. There was none. There wasn't even a hole in the jacket.
"Field testing, yo. I guess it works."
"Asshole," Brian said.
"What the fuck, man? What if you hit me in the face?"
Adam shrugged.
"You'd probably heal. The shit I seen Jebediah go through, he always makes it, except when someone stabs him with a certain knife."
"Oh, Adam, let it go," Alder said.
"Brian is here, isn't he?"
Adam nodded.
"Yeah, he's here, yo, and looking like he has a whip-ass tailor, if I don't mind saying so."
Brian's hands kept feeling up and down the coat, looking for dents, but the fabric felt fine.
"What the hell is this made out of?"
"I have a contact at Breckford International," Adam said. "They make this shit called Armorite. It's got boron carbide and a bunch of other stuff they won't even tell me about. What you have there is a custom piece, yo."
"Custom?" Alder said. "Do I even want to know what this did to our bank account?"
"Only if you're ready for that final heart attack, Grandpa."
"I think I'll pass."
"Okay, so it works," Brian said. "Trouble is, I can't get to my guns."
Adam put his pistol in the small of his back again.
"Come on, douche. I'm not a fucking amateur here, yo. Just reach behind you, man. There's 2 slits. You can reach right in."
Brian reached to the small of his back. His hands naturally slid into the slots. He felt the cool handles of the Fabrique Nationale 5.7mm pistols. He pulled them out, smooth as silk.
"Well, I didn't even see the holes in the back when I looked at the coat."
Brian twirled the guns Old West style, then slid them back behind his back fast. They slid right through the flaps and back into the holsters.
"Oh, give me a fucking break with that twirly shit, yo. What's next? You gonna say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker?"
Even though he'd just been shot by the man, Brian still smiled at Adam.
"Some pretty slick stuff, Adam." "There's more, douche. Check out the similar slit just behind your wrist, yo."
Brian did. His hand slid into the coat and felt a handle. He pulled and found his hand holding a long knife. The blade was thin, 1 inch across at the base, about 8 or 9 inches long.
"Jesus, Brian said. I didn't even know that was there. Other arm, too? Of course. Remind me not to wear this coat in a metal detector. Don't even worry about that, yo. The knives are ceramic, sharp as shit.
Adam, have you lost your mind? Alder said. The knives must be silver.
Grandpa, all they need to have is the silver dust. The sheaths are loaded with the stuff. Every time Brian puts the knives back in his coat, they get a fresh dose.
Brian slid the knife back into the wrist slot. It clicked home, leaving a powdery smear on the coat's fabric. He brushed at it. Most of the dust wiped away.
Nice, Brian said.
Alder looked at Brian, then at Adam.
That's absolutely brilliant.
Brian craned his head to look at the coat from more angles.
You got any other toys in here? Hat and gloves in the pockets, Adam said. Hat is a skull cap, same material as the coat, but put it on.
Brian found the black hat in the pocket and put it on.
Now feel for a snap in the back, yo. Unclip it and pull it forward.
Brian did. A flap of the thick material came off the top. He pulled it forward, and it fell in front of his face, but he could still see. Eye slits. He looked at himself in the Dodge's tinted window. The heavy black fabric hung down to his sternum. Not a single identifying feature showed. He could be anyone.
That's just the fabric. It doesn't have the little armor tiles that are in the coat. The fabric will stop knife cuts, maybe even a small caliber bullet, but it's not going to do shit for kinetic energy. Someone shoots you in the head with a magnum, your brains are going to be bouncing around inside your skull. So try not to get shot in the head, douche.
I'll make a note, Brian said.
He pulled the fabric off his face and behind his head. It snapped back into place. Once again, it looked like he was wearing nothing but a skull cap. They walked through the wooded section between Portrero and Highway 101 until they could see the hospital. On Brian's left, he could hear the nonstop hissing traffic from the highway. Brian found it ironic that now it was he who skulked beneath a tree while Xavier was up in the building. There were differences, of course. Brian had been conscious, whereas Xavier was probably still out.
Alder, you got to be kidding me, Brian said. That's 3 stories tall. I can't jump up on that roof. Fucking pussy. Adam, hush. Brian, of course you can make that leap. Jebediah could make it.
Yeah, and then what?
Brian said.
I get up there and I what? Just grab Jebediah and then jump 3 stories back down?
Exactly.
Brian shook his head.
This is fucking nuts.
Oh, where, yo? I can't jump that high. It's dangerous. I don't wanna.
Adam, you better shut your fucking pie hole or I'm gonna kick your ass.
Oh, blow me, cop. I hate to piss on your parade, but you're not the first stormtrooper to trample on my civil rights.
Enough!
Alder hissed.
My God, if the two of you are the future of the saviors, we might as well bare our throats and let Marie's children kill us all. Adam, be silent. Brian, we can waste no more time. You have to get in that hospital now. You are acting like a child. Just do it.
But what do I do?
You jump, douche. Real high, yo.
Fuck that, Brian said. I'm going in on the ground floor.
Alder sighed.
Maybe it's best you don't wear the cloak after all.
Adam started laughing. Brian cursed under his breath and walked to the building. The smell of cannabis. Brian smiled. This would be easier than he'd thought. He walked up to the fire escape door. Just one orderly, sitting under a single light that lit up the door in the sidewalk. The guy had a view of the embankment and the wall that led down to the highway, but other than that, trees or bare dirt all around. No one would ever see him here. The guy probably got baked every night. Brian walked right towards him. The man was in mid-drag when he saw Brian. His eyes widened, and he quickly flicked the joint away.
Don't bother, Brian said in his best take-no-shit cop voice. I already saw what I needed to see.
Saw what, man?
Save it. I'm a cop.
The man's shoulders sagged.
Aw, fuck, man. Come on. It's no big deal. Where's your manager? Jesus. You gotta bust my balls like this?
Let's go. Back inside.
The man hung his head, pulled a key ring from his pocket, and swiped a plastic card through the door slot. He walked in. Brian followed and found himself in a concrete stairwell. The man stopped and turned.
Dude, seriously,
I'm appealing to whatever laid-back part you may have left in that hard, hard cop heart of yours. Man, I'm gonna get fired. Brian stared at him, then shrugged. All right, fuck it. I ain't got time for this. Listen, I'm here to see that crazy fucker on the third floor. Walk me up there and I'll let it slide. Dig? The man smiled a big stoner smile. Marvelous. Karma's going to pay you back for this, brother. I just know it. He walked up the concrete stairs and Brian followed. Three figures standing under the trees on the embankment to the southeast of the hospital. One figure held something in his arms. Just 50 feet to their right, past the retainer wall, and down about 20 feet, hundreds of cars whizzed by on Highway 101. The tallest of the three figures straightened his tuxedo coat, then looked at the small teenager in his arms.
Are you ready, my king?
The boy nodded. It's time, Pierre. Let's kill this enemy of our people. Sly, lead the way.
Yes, my king.
Sly crouched, then jumped, flying silently through the air to land on the hospital roof three stories above. The third standing figure tugged on Rex's sleeves.
Do I go now?
Sucka asked.
Just wait, Rex said. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I am an assassin and I will serve my king well.
A few seconds later, Sly peeked over the edge of the hospital and waved. The coast was clear. Pierre jumped. Rex smiled as the night air whipped by his face, sweeping back his hair. He rose up, majestically, then felt the tickle in his stomach as they dropped. Pierre landed lightly on the roof. He set Rex down just as Sucka landed. Rex smoothed out his suit jacket.
Tonight, the Nocturnal family takes care of all accounts.
The four moved towards the roof access door. Brian came out of the third floor stairwell. It was 2 a.m, and the place was dead. That let him move quickly, but he still walked. He didn't want to draw any attention. If he could just make it to Savior's room, then talk his way past the door guards, then he didn't know what. He had to get Jebediah Erickson out of the room and out of the hospital. He wasn't jumping out of a goddamn window, no matter what Alder Jessup said. Two uniforms at the door. He recognized them both, Jason Green and Stephen the Breeder Kilbride.
Hey, Jason, Brian said as he walked up. How goes it, man?
Jason and Stephen both looked at Brian with wide eyes. They looked at each other, then back to Brian, and both rested their hands gently on their sidearms.
Hey, ninja, Jason said. How the fuck did you get in here?
I walked in, Brian said. Hey, look, I know we had a bit of a scuffle last time, but lay off the gun, man. I'm not going to do anything.
Ninja, I hate to do this, but...
He drew the weapon and held it at his side. Kilbride did the same thing.
I gotta take you into custody.
The words bounced around in Brian's head, but he couldn't nail them down.
Custody? Seriously? What the fuck for?
For the murder of Francis Parkmeyer.
What?
Kilbride took a step back and to the left, making more space so that Brian couldn't attack them both at the same time. Brian knew the maneuver, basic positioning, but it seemed so surreal. He did that to other people. People didn't do that to him.
Jason, seriously, what the fuck is going on?
Jason took a step back and to the right. Just like Kilbride, everything real slow.
Get on the ground, Brian. I'm not digging this shit at all, but Robertson called it in himself.
The pieces fell together. Robertson. Robertson had taken Brian's gun, taken it, and used it to kill Parkmeyer.
Motherfucker.
And Brian had just walked right up to two patrolmen and said howdy.
Jason, you know me, man. You know I didn't do shit.
Kilbride had had enough. He raised his gun and pointed it at Brian's chest.
Doesn't matter, Kilbride said. Just get on the ground, man. I'm sure we can sort all this out.
Brian couldn't let this happen, but he couldn't take out two cops.
He had to get to Erickson.
Guys, put the guns away.
Jason raised his weapon.
Hands behind your head, Brian. And please, please don't try anything because we both know how fast you are. You move funny and I will put you down.
Jason, I...
Put your hands behind your head and get on your knees, Kilbride said.
Brian knew this part of the game as well. You start out real polite. Then you raise the volume in your cop voice until the perp gets the picture. And then Brian felt it. A warmth in his chest.
Oh, shit. Not now.
He looked down the hall, past Jason and Steven. He looked, and he almost pissed himself.
His dreams. All of it. Real. Real.
The snake man. The dog face. Some little guy with a snatch for a nose. And Rex Deprovtichuk. All four of them, walking down the hallway, carrying guns.
Guys, behind you!
Brian started to move to Erickson's door, but hadn't made it a half step before two bellowing cop voices roared at him.
You get the fuck
down! Do not fucking move, asshole!
It all happened in 2 seconds, beginning with Brian's heart breaking, because he knew what was about to happen and he couldn't do anything to stop it. Not even he was that fast. The lizard face and the dog face raised their guns and fired. The roar of a shotgun and a high-caliber pistol. Kilbride's head exploded, his face rupturing out in a spray of blood and brains and bone that splattered on Brian's new coat. That must have been the pistol, because something big hit Jason Green in the back and threw him forward. Brian dove to the left, cutting in front of the flying Green and hitting the hospital room door. He flinched for the impact, but blasted right through the wood, which split in half, ripped apart by Brian's unexpected strength. He fell and caught himself, his hands hitting the floor even as splinters dropped around him. More warmth in his chest, this time from Erickson, who was still handcuffed to his hospital bed.
Satan be gone!
Another shotgun blast, a scream from Green. The monsters. Brian pushed off the floor and spun towards the door. As he turned, his hands shot into the slots behind his back. By the time he peeked past the doorframe, he had a FN 5.7 in each hand. His fingers flicked on the triggers, sending a half dozen rounds down the hallway. The monsters ducked and turned. He saw Rex fall backwards, spinning to the right. He'd hit him in the shoulder. He was sure he'd hit the snake face as well. Brian fired 6 more shots, 3 from each gun, as he lifted his right foot and stepped over the face-down Jason Green. Even as he moved, the dog face grabbed Rex and dove through another door, smashing it in just like Brian had done. Brian hooked his right heel under Green's left armpit and yanked, pulling the big man into Erickson's room. Again, he didn't know his own strength. Green's shoulder slammed into the doorframe on the way in. Brian heard the crack of a collarbone, but better that than the smack of a bullet. The snatch face and the snake face recovered from the surprise and raised their guns. Brian ducked back into the room just as the bullet shredded the doorframe.
Sucka, get him!
He heard from the hall. Brian didn't have time to think. He was outgunned by motherfucking monsters dressed in pinstripe suits. He turned and fired his left-hand 5.7 at the window. 4 shots blasted out before it clicked on empty. The window didn't break. Big spiderweb cracks radiated out from 4 small holes.
Security glass. Fuck.
Brian's left hand slid into the slot in his back. The 5.7 snapped into the holster. He turned back to the door. Snatchface came through in a blur, ducking under Brian's right-hand gun. Still moving, it hit Brian in the chest, jammed its gun into Brian's stomach, and unloaded. The bullets hammered home. Brian counted 5, knocking the wind out of him, hitting his ribs like baseball bats before the thing's pistol clicked on empty. Together, they fell farther into the room. Brian landed hard on his back, the thing landing on his chest, straddling him. Brian tried to bring his right hand up to shoot, but the thing grabbed the gun with both hands, holding it with shocking strength. And then, a slimy, needle-like thing slid out of the snatch on its face. In his mind's eye, in 1/100 of a second, Brian saw Kyle Soler's chest, the gaping hole, the lack of blood. The thing reared its head back and slammed it forward. Brian twisted his head to the right. The needle point slid down his left cheek, penetrating the skin and sliding along his gum line, tearing skin and gums until it popped out at the back of his jaw. Pain erupted in Brian's face.
He felt blood splatter on his neck. The thing reared back and snapped forward again. Brian brought his left hand up and caught the thing's throat, stopping it cold, the needle point only an inch from his right eye. Brian let go of the right-hand gun, reached across himself to the slot at his left wrist. He pulled out the ceramic knife in a backhand arc, the blade sliding just past his left hand and right through the fleshy needle thing, severing it. Blood poured down on Brian's face. The thing's eyes went wide. It tried to pull away, but Brian squeezed its throat with every ounce of his newfound strength. Brian stopped swinging right and brought his hand back the other way, jabbing the ceramic knife point into the creature's eye. The point dug into the back of its skull and stuck. It screamed. Oh, God, what a sound. Erickson screamed from the bed, "In the door!" Brian didn't think. He let go of the knife and grabbed his FN, still clutched in the shaking hand of the snatch-faced thing. Brian pulled it free and pointed it towards the door in one smooth motion. He'd already pulled the trigger twice before he moved the screaming snatch face to the side to see where he was shooting. One of his blind shots had hit Snakeface coming through the door, hit him in the shoulder. Brian put the next two shots dead center in the thing's chest. It spun out of the door and back into the hall. Brian struggled for breath, the wind still knocked out of him from the bullets that had hit his stomach. He moved on complete autopilot, instincts kicking in and driving him. He stood, turned, holstering the right-hand FN as he did, then grabbed Erickson's bed.
"Satan be gone!"
Erickson screamed.
"I hope you're as tough as they say, old man,"
Brian said. He lifted the bed. Something in the floor broke free as he did. Brian didn't know how strong he really was, but he didn't have time to doubt the obvious. He faced the window and threw. The foot of the bed smashed into the bullet-ridden safety glass. The wire-embedded glass folded out like a stiff blanket. The bed, with Erickson still handcuffed in it, sailed out into the night sky. Brian reached down and grabbed the bloody Jason Green, then took two running steps and jumped.
Well, I hope that satisfied your bloodlust a little bit, junkies. Can't say how long it will take me to get you episode 31, but I'm thinking it's shaping up to be a doozy. Had some amazing, phenomenal coverage this week. A video interview ran on a show called Epic Foo. That's epic-foo.com, which is an amazing vidcast hosted by Zadi Diaz. If you guys aren't watching that, it's all about the internet, everything that's going on the internet, social media sharing, what people are doing online, etc. It's really cool. You should go check that out. Huge article ran in The Independent, a big paper over in England, which was extremely well-timed because Infected came out in the UK last week. Sold a couple thousand copies its first week out of the gate. Publisher's very happy. I'm very happy. I'm going to go ahead and start counting book sales as what they are. They are a body count in the Sigler Ascension. They are effectively the list of corpses stacked up by Siglerism. So the invasion forces have landed in the UK, in Australia, in New Zealand. The bodies are starting to pile up, and the Sigler Ascension world conquest is well underway. Also had a little bit of coverage at a cool podcast called Sci-Fi Surplus, where they interviewed Mer Lafferty, and they pretty much covered the state of the union in podcast fiction and left no stone unturned. They talk about all different kinds of podcast authors. You guys should go track that one down. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Yes, I did finish the first draft of Contagious. That's been sent off to my editor, The Shiv, over at Crown, who's already sent it back with edits. I have one more month from today to get that thing done so it'll be on the bookshelves on December 30th, 2008. The year is going to go out with a big bang. I've been going back and forth with them on the cover. I think when you guys see this cover, you're going to crap kittens. You're going to shit egg rolls. This cover is going to be phenomenal. It's not done yet, but I'm going to go ahead and make a bold statement, which I know that I never do in all of my infinite modesty, a bold statement to say this could be the greatest book cover ever. Now, I've been catching a lot of crap on the site at scottsigler.com about the delays in the episodes. And most of this crap has been the typical crap that you guys always give me. I know you guys all hate my friggin' guts. I hate you right back. Can't stand you. And it's all part of the fun to give crap.
Some people went a little bit overboard, and I might have overreacted to it, but I have to keep reminding myself that the reason people get upset about not getting their episodes is because they're enjoying the story. And that's why I do this stuff in the first place. I am here on this earth to entertain you. So if anything I said offended you, I do have to say you guys are frequently warned that if you're easily offended, turn it off now, pussy! A brief update on the Infected movie. Still rolling along, I've learned that everything Random House Films has optioned has been turned into a movie. Infected is probably the only one out there that isn't already in the works or isn't very close to being shot or completed. So the guys at Random House Films are trying to find a writer-director. Apparently they've got someone interested in it that they can't talk about and some other quote-unquote big names hanging out there. So I am the last to know anything with this project. As soon as I know, you guys will know. But suffice to say, the Infected movie project is still very much alive and it's rolling. Absolutely no idea when the release date would be for that. I finally completed my story for Seventh Son Obsidian short story project. I'll let you guys know as soon as we have a release date for that. I think you guys are going to love that story. It's a little gory. So if you're easily offended, turn it up now. Buzzay. I know I keep coming back to you guys and bitching and pissing and moaning about how busy my life is. And pretty much every week I come back and say, you know what? I told you I was busy before. Well, shit, I didn't know nothing. That wasn't fucking busy at all. Now I'm busy. Yeah, well, it's gotten more and more busy. The demands to get Contagious done the way it needs to get done, the high quality it needs to be for all of you guys in a compressed time frame has been very, very significant. It's put a lot of stress and strain on my life. You know, that's it's one of the things that goes along with the gig. This is entertainment. When things are going well, the people who put out your entertainment want to get more stuff to market. They insist it be even better than anything else you put out before. You constantly have to keep raising the bar. So you have to keep raising the bar and you have to do it in a shorter time frame. It's been the most pressure I've been under since I started writing and been going through a couple of personal issues during this time frame. If you guys follow the blog at all, my dog of 14 years, Mookie, passed on not too long ago. Her little kidneys failed on her and she was a sick, sick little camper. So she went on off to puppy heaven. I don't believe in heaven per se, but I do believe in puppy heaven. So for all of you who commented on my blog post about that, thank you very much. I've gotten a lot of emails. All that stuff is greatly appreciated, and I really thank you guys. But what this means is, in 1 month, Contagious should be done, should be off to the publisher so they can put it into print and do all the crazy stuff that they do. Contagious will be done. Hopefully. Nocturnal will also be done. Now, we have not confirmed this yet still, but it's my hope that Nocturnal will be the third book in the original 3-book deal I have with Crown Publishing. That would put me a year ahead of schedule because I've already got a really well-developed first draft done. And that means that I've got time to work on stuff. One of the main things I'm going to be working on is The Crypt. I've really fallen in love with the story and I want to do more with it. Which reminds me, any of you out there who are artistic or no artistic sci-fi type people, there is a contest to design the warship that will be featured in The Crypt. I would really like this to come from a junkie or from someone a junkie knows that maybe the junkie can collaborate with them. This ship is going to be the iconic element of the whole series. It's going to be my version of the Starship Enterprise, the Battlestar Galactica, the Voyager, anything that you can think of. I am using a site called pixish.com to have a contest that will end September 30th so that you can design the ship, you can submit it to the site, and then everybody will be able to go in and vote on it. I already posted this to scottsigler.com. I'll also include a link in the episode 30 show notes. So those of you who have listened this far, you are the true fans. You are the hardcore junkies. Thank you so much. Thank you for your patience. Believe me, once I clear Contagious out, I am going to be throwing so many sick, nasty, chunky, tasty stories at you that you are going to have to duck like you were in a 7th grade food fight, lest you get that piece of mashed potato smashed in your face and going up your nose and you kind of inhale it into your lungs and you asphyxiate from mashed potatoes. That's how much fiction is going to be coming your way. And it's good. It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. Wow. Sometimes when I think about it, I frighten even myself.
It's going to be that good.
Siglerism continues to march on and crush the world beneath its big metaphorical boot heel. Thank you, junkies. I will catch you for the next episode of Nocturnal.
You have been listening to Nocturnal, written and performed by Scott Sigler. For more information, go to scottsigler.com. All music in this podcast provided by Uncrowned off their album Devils and Angels, available now at the iTunes Music Store.